Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Thanks for tuning in today. This is the family-friendly hunting podcast where it's hosted by a wannabe hunter. That's me, Amos Medford. And we're not trying to impress. We ain't fancy, but we like talking hunting. And so that's why we have a hunting podcast. So I appreciate you jumping in today. And I'm excited today to be joined by Joe Gabeau up in Ohio. And Joe's been bow hunting for about 6 years now, and he has gone all in on archery and bow hunting. So it's pretty cool to talk to him, and just really really excited to get this conversation out and for y'all to hear that. So I want to thank today's sponsor, first of all, Anabolic Grow, and some great people over there, Anabolic Grow. They've got a cool product that'll help you with your food plot. Basically, it's going to help you increase your yields and nutritional content. The wildlife are going to benefit from it and hopefully frequent your property more than the neighbors. So that's kind of the plan. So whether you're like me with a couple half-acre plots, or you've got, you know, corn and beans and everything far as the eye can see, give Anabolic Grow a look and just check them out. They're on Instagram. And, of course, you can check out their website, anabolicgrow.com. And use Wannabe Hunting 10, save you a few bucks if you order something. So appreciate that. Appreciate them sponsoring, and also appreciate you guys for tuning in today. Let's jump into this one with Joe Gabeau. Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast, and I'm excited today to be joined by Joe Gabeau. And I've been following Joe on Instagram for a little while and enjoying it. So I'm excited to talk to him today about bow hunting, archery. We'll dive into a little bit of fitness stuff, which if you're like me, you could use a little help on. So I appreciate you joining me today, Joe. How's it going?
Hey, good. Yeah, thank you, man. Excited.
Cool, man. And this is the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. The idea behind the name is, you know, a lot of us are at work. I'm on my lunch break right now. And, man, I want to be hunting. I want to be, hanging a stand, checking a camera, getting ready for archery coming up here in about 37 days in North Florida. And, so that's kind of why we're on the podcast talking about hunting. Cause, that's what we want to be doing, man.
Right. Exactly. Dude. any type of hunting or pre-hunt work beats, sitting in the office for sure.
Yeah. I feel like that's pretty relatable to almost everybody who's searching hunting podcast. So
yeah.
Cool, man. Well, I just want to give you a chance to introduce yourself and kind of you can go as detailed as you want or keep it pretty vanilla, but just kind of where you're from and maybe dive into how you got into hunting.
Yeah, definitely. Joe, and I'm out of Akron, Ohio, which is like, I don't know, like 30-40 minutes south of Cleveland. I got into archery like six years ago. My father-in-law had been hunting since he was like 10 years old, and so I've known him now for like 10 years, and so I would see him every fall and stuff. He would go to Southern Ohio and he'd hunt the farm we hunt now and stuff, and I was always just like super interested. He passed down a bow to me and showed me like the fundamentals of, you know, just like how to anchor, how to draw. And, you know, then took me to the farm. And I think the first hunt I did was spring turkey. And so we went with shotguns, and it was kind of just like an opportunity to see the farm and, you know, see what just like hunting was in general. It was the first time for me, being on the property, being in a blind. So it was pretty cool. And a cool thing about like an added bonus to it was like a bonding opportunity, with him. He actually had been diagnosed that year. He got diagnosed with cancer, and, it was weird seeing him. He's like an old school Italian, concrete guy. So if you've met one, you've probably met them all basically. But and to see somebody, you know, a strong guy, having to go through that was hard and stuff. But the hunting piece of it was awesome because it took his mind off of the you know, the treatments and all that. And he got to pass down kind of like some knowledge and you know, skill set that he's had for a long time. So then fast forward the off season into getting ready for archery, bow hunting, whitetail for the first time. And I was just consumed by it. Just everything about it was awesome. And it was, you know, 6 years ago. I mean, the industry looks almost completely different now. And so you had, you know, a couple different people, like main, you know, big names to go to for, you know, people you wanted to be either your idols or information. You know, you had like Cameron Haynes and John Dudley. And now, you know, there's so many people out there that have small brands and businesses, but you can look to, and there's a lot of good information.
No worries. Yeah, you're just talking about kind of how there's a lot of places, you know, brands and people you can get info from now, you know, compared to back 6 years ago even.
Yeah, which doesn't seem like it's that long, but it's kind of nice to have those resources there for you. Yep. But yeah, I was just totally consumed. I mean, John Dudley was like, still is. I mean, I go to him for, you know, all types of information. And back then, like shooting for Hoyt and stuff, he had, you know, his whole school of knock, which he still does. But he had videos, and you could learn how to tie your D loop and reserve. And so it was awesome. I was completely, you know, engrossed, I guess, with the whole process. And so, yeah, so that's how I got into it, into bow hunting and archery in general, was my father-in-law. And then throughout the years, I've done, you know, whitetail, I've done turkey here in Ohio. And last year I went out to New Mexico for archery elk, which was awesome, super fun. Nice. And I'm going to be doing the same thing this year. So me and him are actually going out, same unit and everything as last year. So it should be a fun time.
That's cool, man. A lot of cool things you said there. You know, obviously, that's awesome that it gave you an opportunity, like you said, kind of for a bonding time with your father-in-law. And it's funny that you said that. The guy who's most responsible for getting me into hunting is a concrete guy on the admix side, actually. But anyway, so I kind of know where you're going with that. But,
yeah.
but it's awesome, and that's cool that you've been able to go whitetail, turkey, even out there for elk and stuff. So that's super cool how it's progressed and gone for you in those 6 years. I'm curious, how many, you know, like bow upgrades have you done? Like, how many bows in are you?
Yeah. So let's see. I, all the way up until last year, I was shooting, basically his hand-me-downs each season. So he would, you know, my refresh was kind of based on his refresh rate basically, but let's see. I started with a Hoyt Carbon Element. I think that was like a 2013 bow. And then I went to Carbon Defiant from Hoyt. And then an RX-1 from Hoyt. And I shot that for a couple years. And then last year out west, I went with an RX-5. So, from Hoyt. So that was my first model year bow, like new bow, never shot kind of thing, which was cool. And then that sort of started like a problem, I think, because then I was like, oh, well, this is great. I have to look every year for new bows. And so then, now I'm shooting, I got it in at the end of November. I've been shooting it since December. It was at Matthews, V3X.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm always interested to see like how that goes for people.
Yeah, right. Like I don't know. I really like this bow. It fits really nice. It holds really nice. So I've been telling, at least I've been telling my wife, I'm like, I won't even look at the bows next year. Like, we'll, when they come
Easier
out.
said than done.
Yeah, right.
No, that's cool. And like in theory, I love the idea of getting one that works and just keeping it.
Yeah.
I had a guy on the other day who has a Matthews Adrenaline, which
Okay.
I forget what the year is, but it's like 15 years old or something like that. It's like the
Oh,
first
wow.
bow he ever hunted with, and he still hunts with it. And
Wow.
he killed some awesome deer last year, and it works for him. It's like, who cares? But
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, it's hard not to see the shiny new things. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's for me is like I've never with so far with any of these bows except this one, I have not felt like yes, this I could easily run this for like multiple years without question. Like, and this one I do feel that. So I do get that for sure.
Yeah, that's cool though, but I like the setup you had there. I need to find somebody who upgrades like every year so they can pass it on.
Right?
That seems like a
No,
good
it's great. Yeah, you know, it's like when you're getting into the sport too, there's so much that you need to buy, like initial purchases. So it's nice to not have to buy a bow. And honestly, you know, shooting a year bow is like it's brand new still, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What kind of like poundage and draw length are you?
So for the all my Hoyts, I was 70-pound limbs, and then basically my buddy Joe does all my Bowtech work, and he was able to get like a you know what like 4 pounds out of it with like some voodoo with the control cables and stuff. And
Right.
this Matthews is I have 75-pound mods on it, and I just left them. They came in perfect, so I just left them at 75. I didn't like try to squeeze any extra poundage out of it, tuned great. And I've been shooting 30 and a half across the board.
Okay, gotcha. That's cool. That's one thing that I've noticed, like, you know, just doing research and stuff, and you know, you start reading all these numbers, but you got to kind of look at it from terms of what is my draw length and draw weight compared to, you know, the IBO or whatever they run it at and stuff like that. So it's just kind of a one of those interesting things that going into getting a bow for the first time, I never even considered, but all that comes into play.
Oh yeah. And even like I thought the exact same thing. You know, it's like, well, this bow's specced at this. This is what it's gonna produce. But you know, then you have a hunting arrow and not an IBO, you know, 350-grain total weight arrow. And it's like, wait, what? This is nowhere near what it's supposed to be. But yeah, it's funny. It's I was watching something, I forget what it was, some YouTube video, and they were talking about all the different discrepancies between IBO right now and like lack of regulation, and you know, different companies can use actually different chronos, and so it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I've heard some stuff about that, how, you know, you have so many things that are regulated, but then they're using different distances and stuff like that. It's like, well, of course they're different.
Yeah, right.
But the thing I look at is if you're buying a bow that was built in the last like 5 years, you know, you can tell if it's fast. You know, it's one, it's fast enough, but two,
Yeah.
and tell, like, even if the number is pumped up a little bit or whatever to make them look good in their ad, it's like, well, you know, it's still a fast bow. I don't know. That's
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's funny too to see like speed wars kind of come and go and then come back again. I feel like all I hear now, everyone is concerned with speed. And I think if like that new like PSE Omen that came out, I don't know if you saw it. That thing is very cool. It's kind of an anomaly. And so it's running, I don't know what it's like, what, 3 almost 50 or something like that IBO. And it's 33 inches axle to axle, which is crazy, but then it's down to like a 5 3/8 brace or something. And like so it's this weird like hybrid like mutant bow of like stable platform mixed with like short brace height and like high performance cam. And I think that's cool because if manufacturers can start going that route where now you have more forgiveness, with your riser, but also speed, and you're not killing yourself on like cam cycle. That's pretty interesting if it starts trending that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely cool to see where the technology goes because, if you can get something that shoots really fast and has smooth draw and you can hold it stable, I mean, that's what everybody's looking for anyway. Because
Right.
generally, if you focus on one of those things, you're sacrificing one of the other at least. So it's
Right.
like you got to pick your poison, but
Right.
they make it harder on you as the consumer if they start putting out products that are better in two out of three categories or whatever,
Right.
So
Exactly.
that's pretty neat. Yeah, I never can remember with the V3 and the V3X and all that VXR. My brother just got a Matthews last year. I think it is the V3X. So, really cool bow. I definitely like Matthews. That would be one that I'll look at when I upgrade next. So that's cool.
Yeah, I never shot any of them. Let's see, 2022, I guess going into 2022 season, I shot the V3 and I liked it. It just was, I think it was 30 and a half or 31 or something like that. It just wasn't quite enough to get me to switch. I was just really familiar with that cam cycle from Hoyt, and then Hoyt also went to a binary cam, and they did I thought, a phenomenal job with it. So I stuck with what I knew. But 30 inch bows are just hard. I'm realizing now, like string angle and stuff at my draw, it's just harder to kind of get into naturally.
Right.
So the 33 was great. I never shot anything at that ATA before.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's interesting too. My current bow is an Expedition Explorer SS and it is 28 inch axle to axle, but
Okay.
my draw length is 28 inches, so
So it's perfect.
it's perfect. And I'm
Yeah.
interested. I want to go to a shop and shoot like a V3 that's 27 inches. And just see like what it feels like and how that affects it. But
Yeah.
yeah, for me, it's like a 27 or 28 or 30 inch bow is not a big deal. But yeah, if you're pulling longer, that I can see how that string angle and head angle would get interesting.
Right. I mean, totally doable, just not as comfortable, I think. Great for, blinds and like close quarter stuff where you don't want to knock stuff on trees, but like you said, you almost have to pick, what you rank in level of importance for the hunt that you're going to do, because I just realized, like, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get into something that I can, the string angle and my head's a little more in a natural position when, touching your nose to the tip of the string. And but all those things kind of come into play.
Right. Now, I'll be honest, man, I have not watched like a ton. You have a YouTube channel, right?
Yeah, so that's pretty new.
Okay.
So there's a lot of, I'm trying to post shorts on there, and I have some like mini vlogs that are on there right now, like gym stuff, range day stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure like if your plan was to like post some hunts or keep it more like archery practice workout related or both all the
Yeah, somebody at the range yesterday asked me, because me and my buddy who films and stuff were there, and I was like, you know what? I really don't. I need to have a plan, as it is the 11th of August, but I don't have a plan. I think self-filming would definitely be is on the table for sure for some hunts. I think would be awesome. And so I did. I filmed with the intention of shooting a turkey this turkey season. Nothing came out to the decoys the day I brought the camera, obviously, but
Right.
in a blind it's real easy. It's kind of, I think, easier to get your feet wet manipulating a camera, trying to set that frame that up, and then also draw. But yeah, I think that's something I want to do. I haven't done it, so it's on the intimidating side, but it's definitely like on the menu, I think, to add to YouTube content.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm about 5 years into hunting, maybe 5, 6 years in general. So I've got two deer, one with a rifle, one with a black powder.
two turkeys, both with shotguns. And I don't want to lose an animal because I'm trying to film. But
yes.
I'm very interested in trying to film. So it's kind of one of those, you know, things I'm trying to weigh. But I think I might just get like that stabilizer mount painted arrow. It's like a magnetic.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah.
I might just grab that, throw my phone on it. All I have to do is click record like when I'm going to shoot. And maybe I can at least catch, you know, the shot and impact. And start simple.
No, I like that. I'm in the same boat with you. You know, you only get so many shot opportunities, and being, you know, newer than some of these guys that have been hunting since they were like 15 or 10 or something, you know, you're already making enough mistakes on your own. You don't want to lose, you know, a shot opportunity, which, you know, because you're trying to shoot the deer twice, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And if you go into YouTube and type in how to film your hunts, it's like, first video click on, it's like, I don't go into the woods without, you know, three secondary angles. Yeah. It's like, well, we're talking about two different things, I think.
Yes. No, you know, and I think there is a niceness to the simplicity of shooting from like a first person or from a singular like camera arm, especially for like whitetail. I think that's what people look for when they're looking to watch a whitetail hunt. Now, high production, multiple cam, I mean, that's great, but I don't know, for guys like us, how realistic that is. I mean, even if you had a camera, a guy shooting for you, you would still, so you'd, he'd need to be in a saddle,
right?
Or you'd need to be in a saddle, and he need to be in a ladder or a hang on or a climber. And it's like, just, I can't even imagine the amount of like set up, unless you're just going to one stand, hey, this is where I'm hunting, some guy throws up a saddle in the you know, tree next to you, and you go from there. But
major respect for the guys who do that.
Yes. I know, it's
I'm all for consuming it, I just don't see creating it, not myself, right? Not now, but anyway, it's pretty cool. I'd definitely love to see kind of how that goes for you if you catch anything on film this year.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you a couple things kind of about fitness. Is that like your main job, or kind of something that you do as well, or in addition?
Yeah. No, it's not like, that's not like my like 9 to 5 or whatever.
Gotcha.
Just something that I've been doing. I've been basically doing like programming and stuff since like college. But yeah, I just love it. Like love training and stuff. And then as I was getting into hunting, I was like, I wonder if there's like any crossover. And in the East, I mean, you probably see it as well, like in Florida and stuff, but in the Northeast, you know, it's not like, you don't have to be in like amazing shape, I don't think, to, you know, tree stand or blind hunt. Like, and I think that's where like your, you know, your stereotypes kind of fall into like your, you know, Eastern tree hunter type. But
right,
I do think there is, you know, just in general, like there's a good use for general fitness. But definitely like it was eye opening out west in the mountains, you know, being a flatlander, going out there and then trying to perform. You know, I had done rucking leading up to it, but and I've said this before, but it's like you can do as much as you want to do at 1,000 feet. It doesn't translate great at 10,000 feet. And so there is definitely things you can do to like increase your chances, you know, increase your duration on a mountain. How many, you know, would you be somebody that would have to stop after this many miles? And, or are you going to be conditioned enough to, you've been hiking, you're 4 or 5 miles in, you've covered 3,000, 4,000 gain in elevation. And now something is walking out in front of you. Are you going to be able to be, you know, calm in your shot?
Right.
There is general training. And I think a nutrition base that is, would be beneficial. And so that's what got me thinking. And kind of like that is what I want my approach to be, is is sort of like that fitness kind of background in the hunting space, especially for people, for everybody that, you know, whether you're Eastern hunter or Western hunter, but like for definitely for guys, I think that are Flatlanders going out there are going to have a harder time with the adjustment. It's just so much different than what we're all used to, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it's as flat as could be here in Florida. Primarily hunt, you know, a couple private properties, and I do not have super long, you know, treks to stands at the moment. But it's like, you know, I killed a decent little buck last year. I'm not sure what he weighed, but I loaded him in the bed of my truck by myself. I just got on the tailgate, grabbed his antlers, and just, I have no idea to this day, other than adrenaline of just killing my first buck, how I got him into the bed by myself. But, you know, it's like, you could always, you know, you could always be in better shape for one thing, and it's not gonna hurt your hunting, even if you have a farm with a bunch of redneck blinds on it or whatever. But right. If you're like a lot of us, we're at least interested, you know, in the Western stuff. Yeah. We've, you know, we're watching Dudley, we're watching Haynes, we're watching Hushin. I mean, like, it's great stuff. And the prospect of having elk meat in the freezer is like super intriguing. So, you know, it's good to know ahead of time, kind of, if you're in good shape already, at least you can start shopping tags and collecting points and stuff. Whereas it's like, if you're so out of shape that it's not even an option, then, you know, you've got a lot of work to do. I don't know. That's the way I look at it, I guess.
No, I completely agree with you. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And it's, there's a lot of guys. I think there is a natural sort of draw to Western style hunting. And, you know, it's like, I don't, you know, people put like almost like a hierarchical value on like types of hunting, and like, these guys are your best types of hunters, and these guys are just, you know, it's like, there's such a specific skill set and like finesse to both styles. And, you know, like you said, I just think it's more apparent that physical fitness aids in success percentage out there.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I'll give you kind of like, you know, here's where I'll try to get free nutritional advice from you. you know, like for me, okay. I could probably stand to lose, you know, like 15 pounds, right? And okay. I'm pulling like 58 pounds on my bow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I get in better shape, you know, I can max out my cams at 65. That's going to be good. Mm-hmm. I mean, theoretically, I mean, people can argue all that good stuff.
Right. But
nonetheless, primarily, I would say I do want to shoot, you know, the fastest possible, maximize the potential of my bow. And, you know, so forth. And then, again, to the point of whether you're dragging out a deer through a swamp in Florida or packing out an elk in New Mexico, having that strength, having that endurance, you know, that's going to help you. So I don't know if that gives you a good scenario or not. But, like, if you have somebody in that type of situation, you know, you're kind of looking at it from a perspective of here's some workout type stuff and here's some nutrition type stuff. Like, is that how you present it to somebody? You give them like both of those pictures, or how do you approach that if you're advising somebody?
Yeah, so I just did this for actually a guy I met out in New Mexico. So nice. So it's all sort of like, and what's end goal for the user? Like, so,
right.
Like you're saying, like, you're like, well, so from what you said, right, I want to drop 15 or cut 15, or maybe you don't, maybe if I say, okay, well, if you stay at the same weight, but I have your fat percentage cut, are you good with that? You know, it's, so getting to know, I think more specifically for each individual, what is it that they're going for? This guy down in New Mexico, just wants to cut. He wants to basically drop body fat, cut weight generally.
Right.
So what do I need to do? How do I need to do it? And so my thing is, like, I think macros, and so there's macro nutrition, And there's micronutrition, like, you know, your vitamins and stuff that are in food. Your macros are your three ratios of fat, carb, and protein.
Right.
And, you know, people, I think it's a lot of work, and it is in the sense of like being consistent, but as just like anything, as you become used to, you know, measurements or even, you know, serving sizes, it becomes easier. It becomes second nature. It's not like you're measuring every single thing, but in the beginning you do, just so that you become accustomed to, you know, how many grams is this or how much rice is this or whatever. But I think a good background, a good fundamental is your nutrition, and macros are a great way of counting it and like registering it, because in theory, you know, you can eat whatever you want as long as you're at the end of your day. The easiest way to do it is just daily. Your ratios are equaling your percentages in those ratios that you want them to be, or how many grams. Like if I need you to have 200 grams or 160 grams of protein, that we're at least hitting 160 grams by the end of the day. And protein is always, I think, the hardest for people to hit. Right. I think people think like, oh, fat would be hard for me. It's like, it's protein for whatever reason. I just think it's hard to get enough protein, and everyone thinks they're getting enough. And then you realize like, oh, there's only this much. Like I just did this just the other day. I was like, cup of egg whites, how many? It's like, ends up being only like 20, and only, that's a significant amount of protein, but 22 grams or 22 and a half grams of protein. I was like, really? That's a lot of egg whites. Like if you pour a cup of egg whites in a pan and fry them up. So yeah, so I would always start with your macros. So I would do like your macro programming first. So there's create a baseline for you, and then go from there based on like the intended goal. Ultimately, are we going to end up, you know, where were you? You know, were you starving yourself, let's say, for the last, I don't know, 9 months in an effort or an attempt to cut? It just wasn't working. Do we need to do like some metabolic like restabilization, like reverse diet, get your calories back up, your maintenance calories back up, so your body can sort of heal, your metabolic rate can kind of heal in that sense? Or are you just at, I'm just sort of eating what I'm eating, this is where I'm at, this is where I'd like to be, all right, what's the end goal? I want to cut. Like, we need to be in a deficit. What, how big of a deficit, how strict of a deficit? I would calculate that out like more of on an individual basis,
right,
from your maintenance. So we calculate your maintenance, calculate your, what, you know, what we want to see, and then slowly either step you down, in calories, and always be, you know, it's an individual thing. So I could say, yeah, do this percentage carb, fat, and protein across the board, and you would have multiple result differences across, you know, five people, if you did it across five people.
Yeah.
It's almost like genetic, you know, genetics come into play, lifestyle comes into play. So very, like very individualized from a lifting perspective. That's for me more like the food is like the core piece. The nutrition is the core piece. The physical activity, whether you're doing cardio, lifting, whether it's more of a CrossFit style, HIIT workout style, traditional bodybuilding style, whatever your style is, that to me is more like supplemental. But if there's an end goal, you know, packing out a deer, pulling a deer like that, you know, deadlifting is great. And for me, shoulder mobility and shoulder health are going to supersede, I think, in level of importance, shoulder strength. So, you know, a healthy shoulder, a good joint, that's going to be better for a bow hunter for longevity than just crushing 90 pound bows all day, every day, just because, you know, it sounds just awesome. Uh-huh. And it's like, all right, well, you know, you want to make sure when you're 62, 65, and you still want to bow hunt, because I think everybody wants to just keep doing what they're doing that they like to do, that joint's healthy. And depending again on lifestyle, job, things like that, like my father-in-law, for instance, you know, if you're swinging a sledgehammer for 25 years, your shoulder's probably not awesome, you know? Right. And so he's felt that, you know, he's like, post-cancer remission and building back his shoulder strength and mobility has allowed him to get back to 70 pound bows again, you know, And then, you know, now he's telling me I'm going to get 80 pound limbs next year. I'm like, all right, just don't, you know, but he can. And that's the thing is like, as you slowly step up incrementally, both from the nutrition side and the physical fitness side, I think you'll see a lot of, you know, positive benefits to it. So like, if your goal is like, ultimately I want to go from 55 to 65 on the bow. Yeah, that's definitely doable. And the food is going to be basically the fuel that, you know, is going to supplement that workout for you to, you know, get where you need to go. But I do think the food is number one. I think that's the big piece. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome info. Now you dove into that like very seamlessly. Is that what fires you up? Like doing that for helping people with that?
Yeah, I love it because I'm an analyst for an energy company, and I mean, I just bored myself just saying that. So like being able to do something that you see a direct change and you know flat out it's helping them in one way or the other, whether it's helping them from a longevity standpoint or it's helping them for a specific goal, a hunt, a show, whatever it is that they're doing, or it's just a goal. It's just, hey, I don't like where I'm at. This is where I want to be. For people to take that jump, it takes a lot. And it takes, I think, more. It's one thing to convince yourself you want to do it, and it's another thing to reach out to somebody that you maybe don't even know for help. And so I think that's really cool. And that's something that I want to do more of. Like, I'd love to make a big shift towards that one day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. And, I was just going to say, you know, kind of at the expense of, losing people who've tuned in to find out whether or not to hunt rubs or scrapes. do you do like, you know, a decent bit of meal prep, or like, you know, kind of, do you have anything like that where you're kind of cooking up a bunch of chicken on Saturday and using it through the week or anything like that? Or, I mean, I know every
situation is
different.
Yeah. I do that just because once I have my set numbers, it's so much easier for me. Like from breakfast, I have breakfast and then I have two like middle meals. I've got like a, like more of a typical lunch than like a pre-workout meal. And then the workout, post-workout, and then my dinner. The dinner changes, but I always get the macros from my wife. She actually, she runs an entire like macro nutrition company, mostly geared around women. So she's like the expert. She's the one that I've learned pretty much everything from. She's got like the food science degree and has a culinary degree and stuff. So I know at least that I will get the ratios from that, no problem. So if I can keep my other meals constant for like my need at the time, then it just makes it easier. So yeah, I'll do it. Or, you know, sometimes it's as simple as like ground venison, you know, ground venison and turkey, ground venison or ground turkey, just because they're lean, with like taco seasoning, just fried up in a pan, and then have rice. So those types of meals are, they're boring, but they're so constant, and they just work.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. They travel pretty well too. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I'm in an office, but we have a microwave. So
yeah. Yeah. Just pop it in and you're good to go.
Okay. That's cool. And then, the other thing, a couple more things kind of specific to that type stuff. Do you have some type of protein shake every single day or more than one?
So I'm like, I'm bad about my pro. People ask me that all the time for protein shakes specifically. I'm so bad about it. I only do two scoop shakes. So it's usually like 22 grams a scoop, one directly after my workout. And it's like a struggle. I hate protein shakes, like by themselves, just like with water. And then after your workout, you know, and especially now, like get ready for the mountains and stuff, I'll finish my workout, my lifting, and then I'll go do the stair mill. And then I don't want to eat anything, 'cause I'm like, the stair mill just kicks my butt every time. But
yep.
But yeah.
Yeah. I don't even mix protein with water if I ever use it. I mean, I always do milk. I'm just into it, but
yeah, it's way better with milk.
Yeah, but that I have tried the Jocko Mulch. That stuff's pretty good. I mean, there's a few that I've tried, you know, got samples or whatever that actually mix pretty well, actually taste pretty well. So it's not bad as it was in seventh grade when I, you know, tried to scoop my brother's protein, and I was like, what in the world is this?
Never right,
that stuff.
It's awful and it's sandy and
yeah, it's come a long way, but
right.
Cool. Well, I mean, I kind of struggle with that too. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Some people down those things and you know, they're able to up their protein intake, that's for sure. So
right.
And then the other thing I was going to ask kind of on that subject is, or on working out in general, how many days a week do you quote unquote train or work out?
So that changes based on kind of like what my goal is at the time. So I usually go through like one kind of like one bulk, one unintentional, but it's intentional, but like I always call it like unintentional cut, and then one like maintenance throughout the year. And usually it's like whenever I feel like it. As of last year with going out west, I tried to time it up with that. So I bulked all the way up till I think August last year. And then I brought my calories down to like what my maintenance would be. So from a surplus, I think I was at like a 500 calorie surplus. And so brought that down to maintenance and rode that maintenance out through August and was hunting in early September. And then obviously in the mountains, I think I dropped like 10 pounds in a week. Mostly I'd try to say like 7 pounds of that's probably water. But drop weight and then came back and reacclimated to like the food schedule, because out there you're not eating as much obviously. And right. And then went through a period of maintenance and then right back on bulk. And it kind of puts me to where I am now, which is I'm kind of in limbo. Like August is always, but you know, if I'm going out there, August is going to be limbo, where I cut my workout days down. So there's two answers to this question. I just had my daughter 8 months ago. And so before my daughter, I'd lift like 6 days a week, like no questions asked.
Right.
Once she was born, I switched to like, I don't know, four, and then I worked back up to five. And so five is where I'm at. And now in being that it's August, now just last week I started thinking about, well, do I want to start merging a couple of lifts together to cut my days down to four and increase the amount of like occurrences that I do the stair mill. And so that's where I'm at now. So now it's four with the stair mill every day except after legs.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of where I'm at currently. And then I'll go out there, I'll come back, basically refeed, and then hopefully just be back to like a regular.
I gotcha. We kind of cut out there for a second. Not sure if you still got me or not.
Yep, I gotcha.
Okay, cool. No, that's cool. And that's good to know, for sure. But I appreciate you taking the time today. Before we go, a couple questions for you. One, if I missed anything or something you wanted to say or go into, feel free. And then two, I was just going to ask you kind of a little bit about Arrow Broadhead. Just kind of what you're running. Just curious.
Yeah. No, covered a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff. Arrow's so last year kind of changed in a lot of you know, expandable or mechanical. So this
is a completely different build, kind of just catered to
out there. I can easily use it, and I probably will use it here. And you think, like, sometimes you got to field edge, range out a little bit, For the most part, I think be like tech, especially if you're from a elevated, you know, position. You have to worry about the angle of the animal. You have to worry about the angle. How high are you versus, like, are you in a 28-foot stand? Are you in a 18-foot stand? And are, you know, how far away the deer is? And then obviously that cut with, are they quartering towards away, broadside, whatever. And then also here is, you know, deep timber stuff. So you're catching them and they're making their runs and you're catching them between, you know, different points in fields or corridors that they're taking. And so sometimes you have to thread a needle. So it may not be a long shot by, you know, from a measurable standpoint, but it might be a very like technical shot to place that arrow. So for me, it's like whitetail. I'm like, well, you could just build a thumper of an arrow if you wanted to. You know, you could build a 170, 590 grain because you're not. I mean, this is generally speaking, but you're not worried so much about, you know, pin gap and arc and stuff, except if you are. And if you are, and then this next piece will, you know, cater to those people. I went out and fixed or a 5-pin slider last year. I liked it. I think my arrow was like 5'10", and I ran like a 5mm axis, 50 grains of brass in the front. I did a 4-foot mechanical, and the mechanical, I didn't get good penetration on the bull out there, out here. So I won't use that mechanical again, but then I started looking at cut contact, your fixed blades, and my A6, they're it's very
similar to if you look at like a
in the bleeder configuration. It's very similar to that. So this year I'm running
4mm or just under, I think it's a 1.66 diameter
black
for the shaft.
And I'm running system, which is like an outsert combo with
100 grain.
And I fletched in these DCs. And they steer really well. So I still have to do I just retuned the bow
last week.
And I just got my first like 50 reps through it since the new paper tune with these arrows. And they're doing amazing. I shot like fletches off of three of them. So they're grouping great at 50.
Nice.
So the weight. I think those are at like 5'10", 5'15", something like that. And I don't remember the front of center percentage, but they're nice. They're light GPI, with the option to obviously like add a lot of point weight, which is pretty cool. So that is this year's like elk arrow, and more than likely that will be my whitetail setup as well, unless I just absolutely hate the 1.66 diameter out there. But yeah,
okay, cool. Yeah, I'm still doing some playing with arrows. We've got a few different ones, I have a few black eagles, so I've not those small ones, not the smallest ones, the X impacts, but I had some deep impacts I was kind of doing some experimenting with, but I think the insert outsert is a very similar system. So anyway, well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for taking the time today, and we'll have to talk again sometime.
Thank you once again to Joe for joining me today. I enjoyed that. I love talking about the archery stuff. Really enjoyed getting into a few of the fitness ideas. You know, a lot of us kind of either are on that train or need to be on that train. So I appreciate him kind of going into some specifics and some thoughts on that. So cool stuff. And I'm always up to talk hunting, always up to talk archery. So good stuff from him. Had a couple little audio glitches, but I think the edit came out okay, and then a few in and outs there at the end, but I think all the important info kind of made it in. So cool stuff from Joe Gabeau up in Ohio. So appreciate him joining me, and thank you again for listening to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Hope everybody has a great week, and I appreciate the support listening in. As always, honor God, work hard, have fun, and keep hunting.